யோம் யோகேன சித்தஸ்ய பதேன வாச்சாம் மலம் சரீரஸ்ய ச வைதேகேன யோபாகுருத்தம் ப்ரவரம் முனீனாம் பதஞ்சலிம் பிராஞ்சலிரான தோஸ்மி ஸ்துவே பதஞ்சலிம் வியாசம் சங்கரம் ச முனித்ரயம் கர்த்ருசூத்ரஸ்ய பாஷ்யஸ்ய க்ருமாத்விவரணஸ்ய ச. In the last session, we were discussing the 27th sutra of Samadhipada. The sutra is Tasya Vachakaha Pranavaha. That means the word which expresses that absolute reality is Pranava. We already discussed this. Pranava stands for the totality of existence, both empirical and transcendental existence. We already discussed this. And then the 28th one was Tajabastartha Bhavanam. So that also we discussed different types of, different methods of repeating or reciting this sacred mantra. That also we discussed. Three types of repetition. The verbal, that is the grossest, and the internal, subtle, that is the most abstract, the subtlest, in between upamshu, where we repeat a mantra without making without really articulating in a very external manner. It's not verbal, but it is not very subtle, so it is in between. So with this we discussed. Then artha bhavanam, meditating on the meaning of that particular mantra. All this we have explained. If you got any doubt, you can ask. So today there are two important sutras we are discussing, 29th and the 30th. The 29th deals with both these sutras, the 29th and 30th deal with some of the obstacles that we formally face in yoga life. So this is a very important sutra, something very interesting, you know. You may notice this. When you try to do some noble deed, or when you try to start spiritual life, or if, for a simple example, suppose you try to take a decision tomorrow onwards you meditate, suddenly you find our mind sometimes shows a tendency to help us, you know. Rather, the mind doesn't always cooperate. The mind is not always willing to cooperate with us when we try to do something noble. This is a big problem. If we can do what we always want to do, a lot of problems in the world can be solved. And there's a very interesting thing. If our mind allows us to do what we really want to do, a lot of problems can be solved. Now, this statement should be taken in a particular sense. Mind will completely cooperate with you if you are doing something that brings external pleasure or happiness to the mind. Mind will not refuse to cooperate. But there are a few things, a few activities that may not apparently be very pleasant, and that may not bring external happiness, or to be very precise, sensual or worldly happiness. So at the beginning of our effort, we may encounter some problems. At the end, when we enjoy the result, then that result will be very helpful. So Gita, Bhagavad Gita, states this in a very, very interesting philosophical manner. There are a few things which are like honey or which are very sweet at the beginning, at the external level, but the end can be bitter. And there are certain things which may be bitter at the beginning, maybe a combination of bitterness and sweetness in the middle, and the end can be also be mixed. But there are certain things which will be very bitter at the beginning and very bitter in the process, in the middle when you are doing it, but very sweet in the end. The last mentioned is an example for yoga. So let us say, for example, you read a wonderful book on yoga, and that book tells you it will be very healthy for the mind and body to get up early in the morning, take a cold water bath, if the climate permits, and then sit for meditation, read holy scriptures, and practice some internal and external disciplines. If you read a book, or you listen to these ideas in a lecture, or somehow you get this idea, and you have a desire, you would rather start a new life, something you have not heard. When you try to do something like this, see, getting up in the morning or meditation, it's certainly not a very pleasant experience for a beginner, because it brings a contradiction between what we have been doing and what we are now trying to do. So there's a conflict. So this conflict is a very unpleasant, unhappy experience. You know, the most difficult and most unhappy, the most unpleasant experience for any human being is internal conflict. Conflict at the physical level, where there is a solution for it. The conflict, the internal mental level, there is really no permanent lasting solution for conflicts at the psychological or mental level. The only solution for psychological problems, internal mental conflicts, is at the spiritual level. So, just like this, you know, when you're going to a doctor, the doctor should not be patient. You are a patient, the doctor should be a healthy person. Then only he can treat you, and he can diagnose, he can prescribe a medicine. So you belong to two different levels. You are a patient, doctor is not a patient. So similarly, when you try to solve a problem at the mental level, you should look for some solution, not at the mental level, but at a higher level, at a spiritual level. Now, if you do not turn to spiritual level, if you try to find a solution for psychological problems, internal conflicts, at the psychological level, there will be really no lasting solution. So, as I mentioned just now, this is the major topic to be discussed in the next sutra. That sutra, the 30th sutra, Vyadhi Sthyana Samshaya Pramada Alasya Aviradi Bhrandi Darsana Alabdhi Bhumigata Anavastitvani Chitta Vikshepaha Te Antarayaha. So Antaraya means obstacles in spiritual life. So that's a subject to be discussed in the next sutra. So this 29th sutra is a prelude, is a kind of introduction of the following sutra. So, what I mentioned is, what are these obstacles? So, the sutra, the 29th sutra is, Tataha pratyakchetana adhigamaha api antarayaha abhavascha. From, the meaning is, from that, you get the realization of the inner self, and all the obstacles are removed. By what? So for that you have to refer to the previous sutra. What is the previous sutra? Tajabastadartha bhavanam. When you do repetition of pranava, omkara mantra, with a focus on the real meaning and implication of that mantra, then mind goes deeper and deeper. From the external, the mind goes to deeper and deeper levels of the meaning of the mantra, and you get a kind of inner identification with the essence of the mantra, and the mind ascends, mind goes to a higher level of awareness and consciousness. So mind leaves the mental level behind and it approaches the spiritual level. So as we approach the spiritual level, leaving the psychological level behind, and then you find these obstacles vanish, the disappearance, the gradual disappearance or decrease of these obstacles, reduction of these obstacles, is called peace of mind. So obstacles appearing in our mind when we take to yoga life, spiritual life, those obstacles create conflicts. Conflicts become very unpleasant, and as we get established deeper and deeper in the spiritual ideal, conflicts decrease, and in direct proportion to the decrease of conflicts, we feel internal peace and happiness. Psychologically, it's a very, very profound principle you discuss in these three sutras. So the first one is 28th one, Tajjapa Stadattha Bhavanam. So when I discuss this repetition, recitation of Omkara, Pranava, Om, that mantra, one should not limit the, one should not understand this, the meaning of the sutra in a very narrow, limited sense. In a broader sense, this repetition can be repetition of any holy statement from any holy text, which somehow links your mind to higher spiritual level. So it could be a prayer from any religious tradition, a prayer that should itself contain an element of spiritual bliss. So that's very important. In fact, different scriptures contain different ideas. Unfortunately, many scriptures contain many statements which will increase your conflict, which will bring a lot of violent ideas, terribly distracting, dissipating ideas. So there is an important principle to remember. But all holy scriptures also contain some great universal spiritual ideas. Every religion, every tradition contains. So if one is not willing to or ready to repeat the Omkara, one can certainly concentrate on any holy statement, any spiritual statement, any hymn or psalms or even parables. If that statement, if that mantra, or if that hymn or psalm is somehow linked to or related to a holy person, a prophet or saint or saintly person, then that particular word or mantra will have a special potency. And this is the central principle of what you call mantra shastra. You may remember one statement of Vivekananda, which is very revealing. Swami Vivekananda says, if you enter a cave and think five holy thoughts, and you disappear once for all, those holy thoughts will not disappear, will not cease to exist along with the person who think those thoughts. Those thoughts will remain as vibrations in the atmosphere, and sometimes hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years later, if another person of the same spiritual vibration associates with this holy thought, this mantra, this statement, then there is a reconnecting of spiritual vibrations happening. That's why many of these Vedic mantras, in the Upanishads you find Mahavakyas, great statements. There are many such prayers in the Jewish, in the Christian tradition, Buddhist tradition. The Buddhist tradition is very rich in many of these prayers. Sometimes they repeat these prayers mechanically. Mechanical repetition is not the best way, but it somehow can be a stepping stone to a more subtle, a more deeper, a more intense way of repetition. Even if a person doesn't fully understand the meaning or not able to fully focus on the meaning of that mantra, still, if one can enter that at the mechanical level, slowly one can improve. So, as I mentioned this, para, paschendi, madhyama, vaikari, four levels of these interacting with the sacred mantras, sacred hymns. The grossest is vaikari, where you very, very vocal, very physical. And the highest is para, where you identify yourself with the meaning of the mantra. In between para and paschendi, these two levels. So we already discussed in the previous session. So I'm not going to repeat that again. So when you do that, what happens? The consciousness level of mind ascends. It leaves the psychological level behind, and it slowly approaches the spiritual level. And as it leaves the psychological level behind, you feel these obstacles vanish. So this particular sutra, as I mentioned, when you repeat that, what happens? These obstacles disappear. The next sutra will give a detailed analysis of these obstacles. So the sutra is tataha. Tata means from or as a result of repeating a mantra with full focus on the meaning of it. And then pratyakchedana adhigamaha. It means from that, what happens? Our level of awareness goes beyond the level of buddhi and mind. Rather, our awareness level goes beyond the physical and psychological and reaches the spiritual level, the atma. And then all these obstacles are destroyed. Now, I mentioned one important point. This is pratyakchedana adhigama. We already mentioned here what it means, pratyakchedana. When you go beyond the level of buddhi and mind, when the level of consciousness goes beyond intellectual level, and this is a very important point. You may have, perhaps some of you may have read the Kundalini, Mooladhara, Swadhisthana, and the Shachakras and all, you may have seen up to Sahasrara. This is not a subject for our discussion here, but I just want to refer to. All this refer to our level of consciousness, our personality, our spiritual life. Very often will depend upon our level of consciousness. So at the very physical level, a small physical problem will become very unbearable, suffering. But when you leave the physical level behind, then you ascend in that evolution of awareness, and then physical problem becomes somewhat bearable. That's why great intellectuals, artists, scientists, thinkers, they are not necessarily spiritual, but they have left the physical level behind. So you find people who are physically, scientists, artists, thinkers, who are physically handicapped, suffering from very serious, Helen Keller, or quite a few prominent thinkers and scientists, even today, who do wonderful work at the intellectual level, may not be spiritual, but they have succeeded in ascending or going beyond the physical. If you are at the physical level, then a physical handicap can be an unbearable tragedy. But there are people who can laugh at this, rather who make use of physical disabilities. And that becomes an opportunity for them to go beyond the physical and they become intellectual giants, scientists, artists, and musicians. So, and if you can go beyond the psychological and mental, then mental and psychological problems also become almost tolerable, bearable. I mean, they are no more very serious problems because our mind essence goes beyond the psychological. It means our level of consciousness, level of awareness, essence, and goes beyond the psychological level. So then all these antarayas are destroyed. The 30th sutra is very important. So it deals with vyadhi, sthyana, samsaya, pramada, alasya, avidati, bhranti darsana, alabdha bhumigatva, anavasthidatva, chitta vikshepaha, te antarayaha. So this is the sutra. So the simple meaning is this disease, vyadhi, then languor, may mean some kind of a psychological, serious psychological conflicts, that's called the sthyana, mind not allowing you. Remember, mind will have no problem if you don't take to spiritual life. That's an interesting thing. Unfortunately, I've come across quite a few friends. If you ask them, why don't you join the class directly instead of listening online? So they say that they listen to online. But suppose there's a wonderful movie or 49ers, some of all these things. There won't be any problem. Because there the mind fully cooperates. Traffic problem is not a problem. So it is not deliberate. That's why I mentioned earlier, physical problems are not difficult to confront, but internal conflicts are much more difficult to confront because they are invisible, they are subtle, they are abstract. If you have a headache, you take Tylenol and things like that, the physical level. And of course, it is an accepted fact that many of the serious internal conflicts cannot really have any lasting remedy in modern psychiatry, even till our time. So it's a fact. So the first one is the disease vyadhi. Which one? Vyadhi. So vyadhi is more or less physical. The traditional scholars try to explain vyadhi, cold or heat or fever or what, based on the three humors, three doshas of Ayurveda. Mi vada pitta kapha. So they try to explain physical ailments in the light of the three humors, which are the three vital bioenergies, which are related to the five elements which are responsible for a physical and psychological well-being. The balance of the correct balance of the vada, pitta, kapha elements. That's at a physical level. So perhaps that we can leave behind. But the next subject is very important, that is called sthyana, languor. So ragadveshas, that's much more difficult. Extreme liking, extreme dislike, which really cannot be explained on the basis of anything other than our natural tendencies and emotions. People are born with certain characteristics. People acquire certain characteristics. But the characteristics that we acquire also are not unrelated to the characteristics that we are born with. Because we have a mechanism, a machine, we have got a tool. We are born with a tool. According to Vedanta, yoga, Buddhism, all Eastern religions, they all believe in reincarnation, law of karma, and they all believe that we are not born, not tabula rasa. We are not born with empty slate, empty table. There are so many things written on it. Means we are born with a bundle of good samskaras, good impressions, and bad samskaras, bad impressions. So that is the tool with which we acquire tendencies and characteristics. So the acquired and inherited, both are more or less mutually related. So that is called sthyana. And then there is another. So from now onwards, from except vyadhi aspect, except the physical disease caused by tridoshas, or the three humors, according to Ayurvedic. Or maybe modern medicine can tell you based on some other physical conditioning, metabolism, and things like that. All other problems are more or less related to mind. And all people, not necessarily those who practice yoga, meditation, etc. Even when you try to do something noble, if a naturally miserly person, suddenly one morning he reads the newspapers, there is a big problem, earthquake or some natural calamity. So if he wants to donate a small $1,000 to that relief fund or something. So if because of his acquired and inherited characteristic, he's a very miserly person, he's a cutthroat, won't spare any money for any good purpose. But he may desire when he reads newspapers. But then, you know, he himself will try to find some justification to avoid doing it. Oh, this money, after all, is not going to the real, in the hands of the real sufferers. So you find a desire to do something, but something within the mental system, acquired and inherited, blocking, creating a mental block. So this is called indecision. It is called pramada. So remember, so this we are going to discuss this. So we are, this is called samsaya. This is an example of samsaya, where mind creates conflicts, to do or not to do. It's called samsaya. So vyadhi is physical, sthyana is more or less psychological, and samsaya is again psychological, doubt. So doubt is a big problem, doubts. I mentioned some time back about the importance of the concept of the sacred in confronting many of these problems. Sometimes when we look upon some practices as very sacred, as something that we should pay full attention to, then that's attachment of a sense of sanctity to what we do can remove many of these problems. For example, samsaya is a doubt. So you don't doubt it because you consider it something sacred. And also, you don't have any psychological conflicts in the form of doubts. Raga, dvesha, likes and dislikes. It's called sthyana, likes and extreme attachment to certain things, irrational, obsessive liking or attachment to certain things, which may not be always desirable, which may be problematic, and extreme dislike to certain things, which may not be problematic. So you find inherited and acquired obsessive likes and dislikes, sthyana, and samsaya, indecision. These two problems can be confronted if you look upon what we do, yoga, meditation, whatever it is, as something sacred. So when you elevate certain ideas to a higher level by attaching a kind of sanctity of sacredness to that, then it is no more affected by indecision, samsaya. Then pramada. Pramada is a carelessness. That also is rooted in the lack of the sense of sanctity. Pramada. So, it's a very, very common thing, common problem. So, vyadhi, sthyana, samsaya, pramada. And then the next one is alasya. Alasya is dullness or heaviness. Both indecision, that is samsaya, pramada, carelessness, and a kind of dullness, indecision, they are all interrelated. To know its real meaning, you can compare how we react to certain things which naturally we like, which our senses enjoy. I mentioned this, you know, watching an entertainment, something that we may not like actually, something we know that is absolutely useless, still our senses get attached to them. And there we have no indecision, no samsaya, no problem, absolutely no conflict. And no lethargy, dullness, you know, zico, I mean, alasya, kind of lethargy, laziness, lack of energy. There's no problem. So what our mind is already familiar with, and what our senses enjoy, naturally enjoy, though we know intellectually that they are not good for us, when we do that, there is no conflict. But when we try to do something that we know intellectually very well that is good for us, and we know that we have to do it, but when we try to do that, then vyadhi is of course a physical disability that we can solve. Basthyana, raga dveshas, obsessive liking and dislike, and doubts, all these emerge. None of these psychological conflicts will emerge when we do something which our senses enjoy, where the senses naturally are familiar with, which they enjoy, because the senses are naturally drawn towards them. So there is no need of any effort on our part. People who are interested in sensational sensory enjoyments, they don't have to think very, they don't have to deliberate, they don't want to work hard, they don't have to face any conflict, because mind automatically flows towards that through the five senses. So the mind flows through the eyes towards visual objects, mind through the sense of hearing through audio objects, and mind flows through the sense of touch, sense of smell, and all that. Without any conflict, without any antarayas, no obstacles. But the moment you take a turn to spiritual life, then the inherited acquired characteristics and the new characteristics, the new activities, spiritually healthy tendencies that you want to develop, there's a conflict. So out of these conflicts, nine obstacles emerge. One of them is vyadhi, which is physical disease, which are comparatively simple. So you find this frequently happening. We don't know how to explain this. In the lives of all great spiritual seekers, first there is a period of struggle, then there is a period of stability, and then, of course, they get established. So you find this, whether the temptations of Jesus or the Buddha's meditation, his mind going back to previous lives and incarnations, you know, Jataka tales, more than 500 previous incarnations, at the mental level, he relives, he re-experiences, which are now available in Jataka tales. So when we turn to spiritual life, then mind automatically brings forth all these inherited tendencies and impressions, which is symbolically explained as more than 500 previous life cycles that Buddha went through before he actually was born as the son of the king of Nepal. Later he came to Bodh Gaya and meditated and became Buddha. So before that he had all these previous life cycles. So like that, when we sit somewhere and meditate sincerely, suddenly these conflicting thought currents will emerge. Those thought currents may be related to what you have experienced in the office yesterday sometimes, or the tragic problem you confronted when you were coming to the temple. But at a higher level, many of the tendencies may be linked to some previous life cycles. But there is a way to get out of this. So yoga says, tajabastadartha bhavanam. When we link our mind to Atman, to the transcendental spiritual divine principle, through repetition of a sacred verbal symbol, that's the best way to use it. So Omkara is the verbal symbol in Vedanta and yoga, but there are other verbal symbols in other traditions, the Jesus prayer. You find, of course, the most classic example, you find in the Russian mystical literature, you find the Way of a Pilgrim is a classic example, how the pilgrim learned the Jesus prayer, and you find in the lives of Russian masters, Russian mystical saints who had evolved their own very ascetic practices of repeating a sacred verbal symbol with a great concentration. At the beginning stage, there may not be concentration. You may be repeating something, mind would be elsewhere. But slowly, gradually, the mind comes to be linked to what you are repeating, and then mind goes deeper. So then artha bhavanam means deep concentration on the meaning of the particular verbal symbol takes place. That is vyadhi, sthyana, samsaya, pramada, alasya. And then avirati, that is a sixth one. So avirati means inability to give up the pulse of the senses. Now that's why, you know, in modern times, many strange practices are becoming popular under the garb of new spiritual dispensations. Because sometimes people want to compromise with the senses. So aviradhi is a big problem, actually, you know. I mean, the inability to give up pleasure, psychological, mental pleasure, right? Physical pleasure. So that's a big problem. I mean, the absence of renunciation. So total incapacity or inability to give up pleasure seeking. The natural tendency of the mind to connect with the sensual objects through the senses. So, you know, the sense objects are outside, mind is within, and the mind flows through the five senses towards different sense objects. And this is a natural tendency of the mind to always turn outward. So paranji khani vidruna soyambhu. In the Katha Upanishad and elsewhere, the statement. Mind is naturally so designed as to look outward. So its natural tendency is to be extrovert. So when you turn to spiritual life, when you practice yoga, you're actually swimming against the current. And swimming against the current means pressure. Because when there's a current and if you're moving according to the current, there's no problem. That's why when people try to enjoy visual sensory things, there is no conflict in the mind because you are moving in the same direction in which the water is moving, the current is moving. The moment tomorrow I will start seeing a movie or something, I will meditate or I will read some holy scripture. I will listen to some higher ideas. Immediately, mind revolts, because your actually mind is then moving against the current. And moving against the current means facing pressure from the opposite direction. Even to remain static, you have to keep moving. You have to exert yourself. Then otherwise the current will take you in its direction. So if you are entering a river with a strong current, if you want to remain static, then also you have to work hard. Otherwise the current will take you in the opposite direction. And turning to spiritual life, yoga is like moving against the current. So one point to be kept in mind is all these obstacles that we are going to discuss, we won't complete the discussion on the subject today. These are not necessarily related to any particular religious tradition or any particular kind of spiritual practice. It can, you find this happening in our ordinary life, not necessarily in spiritual life, in the ordinary secular life. When we try to do something noble, something good, if we are doing it for the first time, the mind will suddenly bring up obstacles. So that's what is happening. It's just like the mind trying to move against its natural, inherited, acquired tendencies, against the flow of the current. Against the flow of the current, of the river. So this you find in all traditions, of course, depending upon the social, anthropological factors in which a great spiritual teacher is born, they may be described and explained in different vocabulary, different metaphors may be used, different figures of speech could be used, different parables. But then, this happens to every single spiritual seeker or every single human being who wants to be an ideal human being. The acquired, inherited tendencies creating obstacles. These obstacles are called, in yoga traditions, antaraya. So, that is the discussion going on. So, avirati is again, but you try your best. Intellectual conviction is there. Mind also somewhat ready, but still frequently there's a fall from the ideal. There's a deviation from the ideal. In some of the commentaries, the commentators explain, once you are aware of these obstacles, you can make a sincere effort to avoid these obstacles. So why do you use the GPS system to know the difficult places the traffic is not good so that you can avoid, take a different turn. So like that, once we at least intellectually understand this, we can make an effort to speed up the spiritual evolution. Bhranti darshana, that is in its very, very crudest sense, it could mean craziness. In its sublime sense, it could be kind of feeling that we have reached some higher spiritual level. That's what happens, you know. If you want an example of this, in the Inspired Talks, which Swamiji delivered in Thousand Island Park, this one statement, Swami Vivekananda says, the essence of the statement is this. Then I shall quote it. The statement is this. If somebody tells you that he's inspired, so God has come and given him a special commission, and what he says, what he teaches, creates all kinds of problems for the whole humanity, then don't take him seriously. It's an example of Bhranti Darsana, really speaking. It could be in the form of hallucination, optical illusions, delusions, you know. In fact, delusions of reference, delusions of grandeur. You find these two delusions, not delusions of of persecution you don't find, but delusions of grandeur is very common among spiritual seekers. Suddenly they feel they are highly elevated. Could this happen? So this is one. And other one is, a kind of mistaking the ordinary spiritual experiences as indications of some higher realization. Because this could block your forward progress, your progression in spiritual life. So that's mentioned here. So we'll discuss this in the coming sessions. Now we can have interaction. We have got 6-7 minutes. So any discussions? Yeah. Seeing you after a long time. Very good. Come on.
So, you said the mind sort of inherited natural tendency, at least for most of us, is to go towards the five senses and the external objects that, the mind enjoys going that direction.
Could you wait a minute? There is perhaps somebody can give you this mic. Your question, otherwise I have to repeat your question. It's a difficult thing to
do. Is it on?
Yeah, it's okay.
So you were saying that the sort of natural tendency, at least for most of us, for the mind to flow towards the senses, towards external objects and pleasures and that sort of thing. And you said that when we turn towards, spiritual life, that the mind's going to resist this, at least at first. Does the mind get to a point where it starts to enjoy these more sattvic spiritual activities, or is it sort of a struggle until,
Through practice of discipline, spiritual discipline, when you deliberately try to divert the mind to turn to some external experiences which could be spiritually helpful, which will bring sattvic tendencies, then the mind's revolt, its non-cooperation will radically reduce. The conflict will decrease. And when the conflict decreases, the mind's objection to higher pursuits will also decrease.
But does it get to a point where the mind actually really wants to go that direction and there's not really an obstacle? It's more, it's more like the natural flow at that point?
So there is one very common discipline that is prescribed. Is at a physical level, we must practice at the gross level. Let us say, doing good work at the physical level. Any good action, instead of exerting a physical energy for sensory things, exerting physical energy for doing some good noble work, which is not related to profit or any visible, tangible reward. That will create sattvic tendency. See, what we do, even the physical action also will produce a subtle mental residue, vritti. So any unselfish deed, any unselfish action, any noble action at the physical level will produce a subtle mental tendency. The reason is, at the physical level we have more freedom, not at the mental level. See, when you want to reach a destination, whether you should take this road or that road, one high freeway or another freeway, it's more or less your decision. You have some more autonomy. But what thought should emerge in your mind, you have very little autonomy, not much freedom. So we have to start with at the physical level. That's why great teachers will always prescribe doing good, noble deeds, unselfish deeds. I can give an example. People who start doing work, exerting a lot of energy and time for noble tasks, from which they don't get any reward, and they start enjoying that. Because the mind increases sattvic tendencies, noble tendencies. As mind becomes more and more sattvic, it also automatically generates more and more sattvic tendencies. And proportionately, non-sattvic tendencies, which cause mental blocks, will decrease. That's why we feel less conflict as we advance further and further. But one important point is we should start at the physical level, because at the physical level, we have more freedom. So mind goes to senses, visual objects. Let the visual objects be helpful to spiritual life. Mind listens to many good things and bad things. Let us allow the mind to listen to good things also. Along with bad things, okay, we got no choice. But along with that, you deliberately push the mind towards some good things. Even if it may refuse, but push it, force it. And even if the mind is not willing at the very beginning, generates more and more spiritually healthy tendencies, when you force it to some good things, then you know it will cooperate much more and more. That's what happens.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
How to... So how to get rid of like a mental emotions, all that, more like a mentally we are like overthinking all the unnecessary things, small things.
Yeah.
How to get rid of those?
So that's true. Again, the mind-body connection is a problem, but it can be a blessing also. How, as I mentioned earlier, we had to give some opportunities to the mind to connect with some higher ideas, then mind will automatically. So you'll find this happening in your life when you listen to these ideas, because you get new priorities along with many other things that people are doing. There are some very useful, spiritually very helpful things also we do, and as we increase more and more of this spiritually healthy activities which generate good vrittis and vasanas and samskaras, then mind will automatically will develop a tendency towards those good things. We cannot radically change the way mind thinks.
Okay. But in some people's life, they say like they have a like complete transformation, right? And if you see some people's life, they have a sudden complete transformation in their life, like a past life and a complete life.
This happens. So Vedanta and Yoga will tell you, people who have...
Even they have a bad life.
Those who have inherited from previous life experiences, a lot of spiritual tendencies, but may not manifest those tendencies for many years in this life. But once they get linked to that, there's a sudden... sudden manifestation. So, what Sri Ramakrishna, the example is, you know, when you hit the rock, suddenly a spring will come out. But you never knew there was water beneath the rock. When you dig a well, you reach the bottom, there's a rock, and you think there's no water. So, there are people who have these tendencies, mm-hmm. which are accumulated. So, the Ramana Maharshi, people like that, death of his father became a great reminder of deathlessness of the soul. So, death of his father was for him a great teacher who reminded him of deathlessness of the soul, the Atman. This could happen due to inherited tendencies. So, that happens. That's the explanation.
But even I have one more question. So, like, whenever you are doing good, whenever you are trying to do good things, okay, so there is like a lack of inspiration, or we cannot do that.
That's why we will continue the discussion. So it is called alasya, samshaya.
A lot of doubts.
That's why. That's because the existing tendencies, the existing store of tendencies, belong to different category. It belongs to one category, and your new tendencies that you want to acquire, the new good things you want to do, belong to another category. So it's a conflict. So that will be there. So that's why at a physical level, if he can do noble deeds, it will generate tendencies. This point is not fully recognized in modern psychiatry. They call it work therapy, for which only somehow engaging the patient in some activity so that he will not feel the... But these activities can play a very positive role. These activities can generate good tendencies and can eventually transform the mind. That's not fully recognized. The impact of what we do on the mind is not fully recognized. The impact of the mind on what we do is quite thoroughly analyzed. That's one problem. So yoga gives an example. Yoga and Vedanta both. Whatever you do, try to do something noble. If you can't do it without any selfish motive, do with a selfish motive something noble and good. And then what we can do, the same noble deed we can do without any selfish motive. There's a higher level of evolution. So that's the idea. So we will continue the discussion in the next class. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa.